4. Gil Carlisle, my former father-in-law, had a West Texas drawl smooth enough you wanted to rub your cheek on it. He never raised his voice. He never had to. A self-made oil tycoon who had more money in the bank than some third-world countries, he almost always got what he wanted on his deceptive country boy charm alone. And on those rare occasions when charm didn't do the trick, his platoon of $1,000-an-hour lawyers usually did.
"Bet you're wondering why I'm calling," Carlisle said over the phone.
"I know why you're calling, Gil. Savannah had tried to get me to go to the police to tell them what I knew about the real Arlo Echevarria. I knew when I said no, she'd likely go sobbing to her daddy. Now daddy was calling, the master of silky persuasion, bent on convincing me to do what his daughter could not."
"You heard about Arlo, I take it,"
he said. "Savannah told me."
"A damn shame is what it is. I'll tell you what, Cordell. Sometimes I just don't know what this world is coming to. I truly don't."
"It came to that a long time ago, Gil."
"Well, I suppose there's some truth to that, son."
The last time Gil Carlisle and I had spoken was when Savannah and I were lurching through the sudden death of our divorce. He'd called from his Learjet en route to a business meeting somewhere in Europe to let me know how truly disappointed he was that things hadn't worked out between his daughter and me, and how he always genuinely appreciated having me as a son-in-law, even if he never did get around to inviting me to go dove hunting with him on his 3,000-acre spread outside Lubbock, what with his busy schedule and mine. Then he warned me, sweet as honey glaze on a side of mesquite barbecued beef, that if I ever tried to claim as community property so much as one...